David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 392. I'm your host to this exploration of the Marvel Comics universe, Steve Raker, celebrating completion of my 14th year contributing to this here podcast. Marvel Noise is the semi-monthly podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. Our scope is all things Marvel, but with a particular fondness for and fascination with the Bronze Age. You can find, listen to, stream, and download episodes past and present over on MarvelNoise.com. Get new episode announcements, give us feedback, and see images and cover galleries on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Item: find other fine podcasts from our benevolent host, Derek Howard, on his Deliberate Noise Network, which include Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show where we talk indie comics. Another item: the Baltimore Comic Con is back. A longtime friend of Marvel Noise, the Baltimore Comic Con is a comic-centered show full of fantastic guests. It's one big, giant artist's alley, true believers, and it's back at the Baltimore Convention Center in Baltimore's Inner Harbor Zone. October 21st, 22nd, and 23rd are the 2022 dates. Check out the incredible guest list and get tickets and other info at BaltimoreComicCon.com. And see you in Baltimore. I hope. Speaking of comic book shows, I just yesterday attended the Albany Comic Book Show, solidified in its new location at the Albany Polish Community Center, now just short of being 10 minutes from stately Raker Manor. With the old hotel Hollow Dome space having been condemned after the COVID shutdown, this new space at the community center is plenty adequate. It provides one big room and a pub in the corner. Get your breakfast sandwiches, burgers, fries, Polish sausages, and beer all day long. Friend of the show Jim Whiting was there, and I spent most of the day hanging out with him at his table, but also catching up with other local comics talent who have become good friends. Statue and Marvel legend sculptor Paul Harding, writer Ron Mars, artist Richard Clark, John Herbert, Kevin Conrad, and they had guest artists Russ Braun, Derek Charm, Paul Pelletier, Bart Sears, Val Simex, Mike McCone, Mark McKenna, Keith Champagne, and others. Jose Garcia Lopez had to unfortunately cancel for health reasons. My pal Mike Spring was there with a table set up for his Red, White, and Broke miniseries, the collection of which will be a Kickstarter campaign later this month in June. Artists were sketching, prints were flying. It's become a nice experience just to see the comic book show wheel productively turning, you know? I mean, the best part of these local shows is really catching up with friends, though. Good people in this business. Looking forward to the next one in this space. Now, it's customary for a little musical interlude while I get my co-hosts WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit on the line for this episode's feature segment. So here we go! Alright, this is an arc that Kevin and I have been referencing to each other as long as we've known each other, right? And we've mentioned it in many of our both pre- and post-show conversations over the years. It's finally time for Round Robin, Sidekick's Revenge from Amazing Spider-Man 353 to 358, which is in an Epic Collection trade paperback and on the Marvel Unlimited. A six-part bi-weekly arc from September to November in 1991.
Wow.
Hard to believe.
Just a few years ago, right, guys?
Well, I got to mention these covers at some point,
too. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Let me just set it up a little bit more before we get to the covers, because they're definitely worth. Actually, each one of them is worth discussing as we hit them. But you could consider this part five, or an epilogue to this deep dive we've been doing into writer Chuck Dixon's run on Mark Spector Moon Knight, that we handled over four segments on Marvel Noise 384, 386, 388, and you guessed it, 390. Always an even number, mind you. And the crossover with Moon Knight, Spidey, and the Punisher with the Secret Empire over in Mark Spector Moon Knight ended in January 1991. So this arc happening in September to November of 91 is just 8 months later. Also notable, Dark Hawk as a title and a character debuted in between and had already crossed paths with Spider-Man in his issue 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And the connecting...
Shout out for Dark Hawk.
Yeah. I like that title. We're going to get to that one of these days, Andrew. You can come along kicking and screaming, or Kevin and I will roll with it. But
no, I'm down with that. I want to see this whole... I want to find out how Rom and Wolverine get together and create a character.
Space Knight. And the connective tissue between all the characters that are in this crossover here is, well, it's not really a crossover, it's a bunch of guest stars, right, in Spider-Man's title, is Danny Fingeroth. He was the editor of Mark Spector Moon Knight and of Amazing Spider-Man and of New Warriors, and he was the writer of Darkhawk. So there you go. It all makes sense. What was surprising to me, though, is Alan Milgram being the writer of this arc. Being a guest writer, this is an unusual spot because this is in the middle of, I mean, it's a fill-in during this epic long run that David Michelinie had on Amazing Spider-Man. And I always think of Milgram as an inker and then a penciler and an editor, editorial, right? And he wrote this arc with art by the series regulars Mark Bagley, with inks by Randy Emberlin.
I know I've had a lot of goofs at Bagley, but I gotta say, like, hats off. This guy cranked out quality pages by the ton. Like, I don't know that I've ever appreciated this pace and quality with which, you know, like I said, I can goof on a noodle here or there, but these are solid, great books jammed out at a speed that, you know, unheard of.
And
I mean,
he was drawing New Warriors at the same time. So over these 3 months, he was on a pace of doing these bi-weekly issues, the covers, and was penciling New Warriors too. So that's 66 pages plus 3 covers a month for 3 months.
I guess that's why he needs to take a break after this.
Right? Although he still gives everybody like the horse legs with those hyper extended knees where like they bend backwards like the old Barbies used to bend backwards, the legs.
Andrew likes that.
Yeah, like I said, I do goof and it's fun, but I just wanted to give sincere appreciation for what must have been a crazy couple of months.
Right?
In that summer when he was putting these out or whenever he went around to, you know, I don't remember the time scale back then, but these, I do remember when Marvel started this summer bi-weekly stuff, which I loved in my youth, but now I must think how the creative teams probably hated these things. Like, no, but because we would get excited, like, oh, wow, I'm getting twice as much Captain America or whatever.
They hated it until they got the check.
You know, they probably were like, well, I guess I'll say goodbye to my family for 3 months.
Right.
And yeah, but just well done all around. That's a lot of work. And so if I do have a gaffe or a little laugh or something, no, it's with the greatest respect to the overall body and quality of it.
Now, Andrew, is this when you were out of comics for a while? Had you read this back in the day?
I don't remember if I read it back in the day. I did read it a little after the 2000s when they did those CD-ROMs of Spider-Man.
Right. Okay.
But I kind of ripped through things. This was still okay, but spoiler alert, it's going to start with like titles like Spider-Man and X-Men. As the 90s wheel on, the crossovers make it very tough to just read one title, because pretty soon it's going to start being like part 3, part 6, part 7, part 9, and then it becomes a bit more of a mess. So I kind of went quickly through it, but that's still close to 20 years ago that I would have read this thing. So
yeah,
it's not like recently or anything.
I liked how before the, I mean, it really seems like it was the X-Books that started doing the interbook crossovers that then bled into, you know, all the other titles eventually in the 90s that way. I liked it better at this time in the early part of the 90s and the late 80s, when instead it was just a lot of guest stars in each other's books. Like, there was no more Marvel team up. There was no more Marvel 2-in-1. So instead, they just used team ups to prop up each other's books left and right.
Yeah, it's fun. It gives you that sense of the character. And sometimes they're not afraid, especially in something like this, to let the guest stars have a bit more of the shine. Like, normally if it's just an issue or two crossover, you're probably pretty rooted in your main character. But here, you know, we really get to spend some time with some of these other yahoos. And the cast is going to expand. I don't want to spoil it ahead of time, but we're not done with just the Jokers on the cover here.
Kevin, where were you in your, like, fandom at this time? Was this, like, one of your first books, or had you been reading for years? I'm trying to figure, I mean, I know you read this back in the day, but, like, when in your...
This is, I thought it was one of the first books, but I guess it's not. Like, I always go back to these type of issues, and I see, oh, look, Al Milgram is doing this, and I'm like, I don't remember that. Like, I totally remember that Bagley was on the book, but I mean, things are still nebulous for me as to who the writer was, or I'm always discovering things like that. Like,
that's fun.
I know there's things. I mean, it was only a few issues ago where it's like, let me see here. Oh, 349, where it's like, you know, they say, oh, you won't guess who this is. And then it's like, I don't know who this is. So, I mean, it's still...
When you don't know, when you don't get the reveal, you know you're still in the orientation phase of your fandom. That's for sure.
Well, I was trying to figure out, too, if this is the first time I had seen Moon Knight in a comic.
Oh. Wow.
I mean, it's got to be pretty close.
So, issue 353 is part one, and... I mean, I really like this cover with the angled upshot. It's nicely composed, and with the light source coming from below, it really caters to Randy Emberlin's inking style, who, I mean, he really likes to exaggerate the feathering the lines and stuff. Works good for the underlighting.
You know, it's the greatest biweekly saga of all.
At that time.
I feel like there's a nod to the Clone Saga, because you see the chimney smoking in the background. I'm joking. There is a, behind the Punisher, there's a chimney, a rooftop chimney that's smoking.
So. I do feel like the rooftops, though, back there really scream, and throughout this whole arc, it really screams that 80s and early 90s Marvel, because it's got, you know, like the wooden water towers and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got a lot of nice skylights, too. You got to spy on the bad guys with the skylights.
And then I like that corner box where it's some crazy Spidey really exaggerating his swing there as he's coming out of the box and into the cover.
Well, not just that, but this is the era of, like, that web line with the main couple of lines and then all the little squiggles around. Again, something that I'm like, boy, that probably took a little time. I mean, maybe it's less time than the regular old-timey web. I don't know, but I always like all the different spider webs.
I find it interesting that this is probably a pretty definitive look of Punisher, of what I think about, but it's also not white gloves, white boots Punisher. Like, it's all black.
Yeah, that came after. Or I mean, the white boots was first, and this look came after.
Yeah. But he still has all his pouches and his massive guns and everything. Like, that's prime Punisher right there. But it's funny that now I look at the covers for these six issues and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, they're not super specific. It's like a lot of characters posing. It's almost a time like those Ultimate Spider-Man covers where you couldn't tell, like, what issue was what.
It's true. That was unusual for this time because this is still a time when the covers really would depict a scene from inside the comic that you would then get to in the comic, and it would, you know, cash the check that the cover wrote, you know, that made you pick it up off the stands. And this was, I mean, part of it was this whole biweekly event thing where they were just having fun with the fact that, look at all these characters.
Yeah, so I don't know if that took less time, because then when you get to the last part, they have, like, the super fold-out cover thing. Yeah. And, of course, later on when I'm drawing my own stuff, or pretending to draw, I would have to try to replicate, like, a fold-out cover type of nonsense thing. I'm like, oh, this is going to be so cool for this issue, you know, extra cover space.
When the arc opens, Midnight, who we know from the Mark Spector Moon Knight bits that we did, is shown performing in a sparring display for his masters, who are the inner circle of the Secret Empire.
Yeah, another one of these.
Where number 7 has taken point, much to the chagrin of number 3. I love the continued infighting, like, within the Secret Empire's inner circle. It's part of who they are, right? It's like the anonymity with the, you know, cloaked heads and the numbers and the hover platforms and the infighting. Those are, like, the three things I think of the Secret Empire. Midnight gets sent on a mission to spring a scientist who's valuable to the Empire, who's in a holding cell. And the scientist is Elliot Franklin. Recognize him? He's Thunderball from the Wrecking Crew.
Now, oddly enough, they lost their powers at this point in time?
Yeah, and it was just earlier in the same year, earlier in 1991, in Thor 430. Now, you can try to say that three times fast, or even one time slow. But they're depowered. It was one of those DeFalco Friends issues. But guess who was the inker? Milgram.
Yeah.
And Loki schemed to repossess the magic that he had bestowed upon the Wrecking Crew. And, you know, we're talking 1991, so there was a guest star in that issue, too. The Ghost Rider.
Well, Steve, I know when I need brain power, I think Wrecking Crew. Like,
No, Asgardian power. You know how they all have their little Asgardian power flowing through them. So it was Thor and the Ghost Rider versus the Wrecking Crew with Loki pulling the strings. But it wasn't
the Wrecking Crew showed up.
Eric Masterson Thor, not a real Thor.
Yeah. Whoa. They kind of go into that whole thing here about, well, you know, there was this guy, he wasn't the real Moon Knight, and I'm like, wow.
So the precinct that Thunderball, Dr. Franklin here, is being held in is where Darkhawk's alter ego, Chris Powell's missing father, worked as a police officer, and Chris just happens to be there getting some personal belongings when the attack happens. And I sent you guys a panel that I recolored where they showed one of the police officers being squeezed it looks like they colored it to try to make it look like a ton of spit was coming out of his mouth, but I think it was obviously intended to be blood, and this guy's getting his guts squeezed out because Chris is screaming, he's killing some of those cops! But it's a Spider-Man book. Even though there's the Punisher and Moon Knight and all these hostile heroes, the darker heroes, it's still a Spider-Man book. But they get pretty brutal.
They have a villain called Carnage coming up.
Yeah, right. They do get pretty brutal.
I feel like Jurgens also owes these guys like a big dinner or some money or something, because that Hank Henshaw cyborg Superman look.
Yeah, right.
Is patented by, done in a very nice way by this team with the kind of half metal, half human. I mean, maybe they all owe the Terminator 2 team some money. I don't know.
As Darkhawk.
I like how they do that quick Darkhawk origin, too. If you're not reading the book, you're like, here we go.
they do a great job throughout this whole run here, this whole arc, making sure that by the time it's over, you know every character's origins and what drives them. Well, maybe except for like Nova, but everyone else, they pretty much go through and explain. They do a pretty good job. I was impressed by that.
Also, still the era where like guys are muscular but not super crazy. Like they're if you stood next to these guys, you'd be like, wow, they're football players or something, but they still look human, as opposed to fast forward a few years when the muscles are gonna be on top of muscles and everything. So it was nice to have like that kind of like still idealized but not so crazy that you're like, what, I don't know what muscle group that's even supposed to be, type of thing.
So Darkhawk tries to foil Midnight's extraction operation, and the Secret Empire goons wait in the wings with these high-powered weapons and solo hover bike things. We've seen them on the big platform, right? The big, like, floating over the Sarlacc pit with Jabba platforms, but this time they've got these little solo hovercrafts. Always hovering. You know, I think that's what sets them apart from AIM and Hydra. Always hovering, these guys. So they join in the attack when Darkhawk starts showing his stuff, and we get to see all of Darkhawk's powers at work, which is great. Nicely done.
And plus, you get to see cool what they sometimes forget is the team puts the rebar in the concrete slabs, which is nice. You know, you don't always, sometimes when they used to rip up walls, it would just be this like thing of hair, but here you have all the brutal looking, and it would be like, you know, if you've seen construction grade concrete, like it's, they put little metal bars in it, like that's part of the construction.
Spider-Man comes upon this scene happening and joins in against the Secret Empire. He knows them from the Moon Knight thing. He's against them, but he ends up letting his guard down while he's saving these onlookers, and Darkhawk is able to pin Midnight against a wall with, it's a pretty cool move, just using a continuous blast from his chest amulet. And they demask him, and he's got the cyborg face.
Yeah, he looks pretty bad with the cyborg face.
He's pretty quick and willing to give up like his name, rank, and serial number, right? He gives like the whole story. But Spider-Man also knows him from, again, from that Moon Knight, those issues of Mark Spector, 19 to 21 there. And he knows that Moon Knight didn't willingly abandon him. He knows that Moon Knight told him to stay away, and he didn't. He knows that Midnight's version of things isn't right. Thunderbolt provides a distraction, and Midnight breaks free and escapes with the Empire's goons, but not before Spidey can tag him with a good old spider tracer. Also, Midnight covers his getaway by sending a unmanned hover platform towards a crowd of onlookers for the issue-ending cliffhanger. Also in this ish, the Punisher is shown to be following up on events from that Mark Spector Moon Knight issue, or those issues, I should say, by like continuing to shake down street informants for leads. He's still on the case.
I can't wait for that Punisher movie, Grammar Cop.
All right, Steve. I'm going to massively derail the train until you get me back on board, but I got to take a few minutes. Okay, please tell me that one of you two called the 1-900 X-Men battle line. Okay, let me give a set the scene. For those of you that happen to be young and are still listening to this, before you could waste money on in-app purchases, they used to have 900 telephone lines where there would be a surcharge on top of the extra charge. And there was this company called Phone Programs USA Inc. that ran a bunch of these. They also ran a wrestling one and a couple different Marvel ones. And so when I saw this ad, and it's 1-900-X-Men, and so you get charged an extra fee, and it's like way expensive per minute, and you answer trivia questions to battle the X-Men to win a comic book, and I'm like, even though I was not a young person, I would never call a 900. I would have been excommunicated from my family or whatever. But I was wondering if either of you two boys dialed the 1-900-288-X-Men line and played the game.
I too knowingly never would think of calling a 900 number, but does dial a joke count? Because I know, like, back in like at the late 70s, early 80s, I definitely called dial a joke a few times. That was the old 555-1212.
Kevin, were you the 900 numbers work from Canada?
I don't know. Maybe that's why, but you kind of knew to not just, you know, do stuff like that.
Protected by their totalitarian government.
They claimed they were going to list the future winners based on high scores in a upcoming X-Men issue. So, you know, that, like, I just flipped through some X-Men, not like an upcoming X-Men issue in 1991 could mean anything.
Yeah, which issue, which title?
Yeah, but I went with the main one. And I noticed that in X-Men 288 from the next year, the same company did a similar, but that was just the trivia question.
Hmm.
And what they did is they had a print, and it's pretty cool. You can still buy the print from, it's a Ron Lim and Terry Austin worked on this big print.
Yeah, I do remember
that. And it's this whole thing. And, well, yeah, you can get it now for $25 on eBay or different sites. And that was another one where same company, dial 1-900 and answer that. And they grid out the page. So presumably, you know, you're going to hit A1 or whatever. Again, the print exists, so I think it might. People might have done it, or they might have just made a bunch of prints. And because the name Marvel Master Vision Superheroes is easier to search than like X-Men cover, which is going to get me an infinite number. And then they also did the same thing with the X-Men. In X-Men 293, they had a Ghost Rider instead of X-Men. You would answer Ghost Rider trivia game to win prints and everything. And I was just like, this is so it's like the hustle before the mobile phone. And I'm like, I never would have been able to dial a 900, but I'm like, if there's anyone out there that did this silly thing, I did some internet searches and pretty much everyone's like me, like, did anyone ever do this?
You know,
like,
what, Andrew, I gotta confess, you know what the other thing I did call? What? Back when cable television first came out, I'm in upstate New York, and you were in even upstater New York. Our cable television consisted of like some of downstate New York's regular channels, you know, so we got like New York Channel 11 and WOR 9 from New York that showed like the movies and stuff. But on WPYX, I think it was Channel 11, if I'm not mistaken. And they had a good block of kids programming, both in the morning and in the afternoon, where you get to see good shows, maybe even like Star Blazers and that kind of stuff. But you could do a thing where you could call in and they were on the screen showing like a video game, like it was like ColecoVision quality type video game. And you would call in and say into the phone, like, picks, 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 to either shoot or do whatever the thing on the screen needed to do. And it was supposed to happen like in time with you talking on the phone. And I did do that once. That was fun.
Mm.
I don't remember the phone bill though that went along with it.
Well, I wouldn't even call the like vote to kill Robin or not that DC did.
Yeah,
like we were very like, I don't know. We lived up in the woods, and also what people don't remember probably is long distance. Even if it wasn't a 900, just calling long distance was prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
Or maybe it wasn't. But my folks acted like it was.
It was, except during certain hours of the day. Like, there was all these little conditions so that they could catch you, you know? Like, if you did it between, like, 3 and 5, then it wasn't as expensive as if you did it between 5 and midnight. Or, man, they had a good racket back when it was Ma Bell.
Yeah, so I just, if anyone listening to Marvel Noise did dial the 900 battle lines, please let us know.
I'm
super curious. I was hoping that someone found the recording and could put it on YouTube or something, but I think 91, you're just, no one's keeping those records that long.
Funny.
Yeah. The only thing I heard about was someone calling like a Nintendo Power game counselor hotline for How do I get past this boss in level two? Or
oh, yeah, that would be a thing. Getting your tip line. Yeah. Tips and tricks line.
And I do remember my buddy got the Game Genie, which there's a ton of ads for in this thing. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be something to let you
get extra lives.
Cheats. Yeah. For Nintendo games. And I remember I don't remember if it really made a difference. None of us, I think, were really expert video game players, so it probably didn't end up changing the day or whatever.
Yeah, but yeah. Just a little like edge. Just a little edge isn't what you needed to get over the hump.
To get past the bunny trail level. Yeah. But anyways, that was my plea to any 900 caller. And also there were 900 phone lines that were of a adult nature, right. Too.
This is Marvel noise. All right, so the cover of Amazing Spider-Man 354, I think, is less impressive than the previous issue, but it's still pretty cool, showing Spidey with Nova and Night Thrasher this time, with inks by Eric Larson, which starts a trend of guest inkers on the covers for the rest of these issues. So they save the crowd from the out-of-control ship with a great move. It's a fastball special.
It is.
And the guy with claws is the one that gets thrown, as always.
And not just thrown to, like, intercept the vehicle, but he gets thrown, like, onto the controls, learns how to make evasive maneuvers on the fly, and save the crowd.
It's also funny whenever they have Spider-Man in a mentor role with these guys. You know what I mean? Obviously in the Marvel U, he's an established hero. But for me, it's always funny when he's like the... It's okay, you young kid, you know, I was coming up through the system too and had to learn my lessons the hard way and all that.
Especially when it's a character that is like one of those in the tradition of Spider-Man, like Nova was and Darkhawk really was. Wait till you read his stuff. You'll see that it's very Peter Parker, Spider-Man-like, even though it's completely different. But he is one of those characters that needed to cross paths with Spidey and not have to learn the lesson the hard way.
Well, Spidey's all married and cool in these issues, so.
Yeah, that's true. Fatherly advice. What's that ring, mister? Well, let me tell you, son.
When you grow up.
And despite, it's an example, this thing of Spidey giving Darkhawk the Uncle Ben speech, despite all of the action that is packed into all of these issues, and there is a plethora of it, even though there's all these guest stars, they still have a lot of like character defining exposition. They take the time, and sometimes it's forced in funny ways, like with the Punisher's dream sequence and everything, but it's still nice that they take the time to try to include that stuff in there.
Yeah. My Uncle Ben question, Steve, is what's converted rice?
Exactly.
Like, I never understood.
Would you trust that man to convert your rice?
I mean, what's he converting it to? Isn't it rice before and rice after? Like,
you'd think. When Midnight and the scientist formerly known as Thunderball make it back to the Secret Empire's Manhattan headquarters behind a dry cleaner's shop, Midnight is miffed that he's not given more credit for his efforts. I mean, all this guy wants is some praise from his father, who's gone, from Moon Knight, who abandoned him, and now from the Secret Empire, who just use him as a pawn. At least his kidnapped nurse, Lynn, is there for him now and always manages to be supportive just when he needs it.
Yeah, I feel bad for her, Steve. I mean, imagine being kidnapped and forced to take care of this guy by a shadowy, scary organization.
And Midnight decides that he's going to take over the Secret Empire and then rule the world, you know, for her. So Dr. Franklin is shown like a variety of these different weapon systems that the Empire want to incorporate into Midnight's cyborg frame and into their plans for an army of cyborgs. They're going to get a bunch of supervillains because they can, you know, withstand the cyborg grafts and stuff. And Dr. Franklin tells Number 7, he's like, I wouldn't even trust my old Wrecking Crew partners with that kind of power, because supervillains, they'll cheat, lie, and rob you, man. So Franklin instead suggests that they sucker some gullible superheroes into the program under, like, a guise of doing good. And, boy, does, in hindsight, does this plan go sideways. So Franklin suggests Nova as a good first target.
And I kind of laugh when they say, well, they don't have this whole mutant agenda. No, they have totally different agendas that are could be equally problematic.
Yeah, Nova, the guy that debuted in the 70s, he's a real new young hero.
Well, the New Warriors is fresh on the scene.
Yeah.
And Fingeroth is writing the book, so they're on also, the tip of everyone's tongue.
The art team didn't get the time-saving memo that you can make Nova's, like, Nova Blast go from his waist down. Like, you don't have to bother with the legs. And you can just give him the full Cannonball treatment.
Well, I was going to say, you don't want to confuse him with Cannonball, who's one of the new X-Force. They correct it, because that's new, too, which is kind of funny.
But they put some time in on the Cap's chainmail, too. Like, remember, this is every 2 weeks, so...
The Empire sends Midnight after Nova to persuade him. Because if you're thinking the same thing I was when I was reading it, I'm thinking Midnight makes an excellent first impression, number one, and should make a fine ambassador for your philanthropic mission here.
What are you going to send the guys in the robes with the voice modulators? Those guys definitely don't seem like they're selling Girl Scout cookies.
And why Cap's in the book is because Spidey visits Cap to try to figure out how to contact Moon Knight, and Cap's like, you know, you're an Avengers reservist, and Moon Knight used to be a West Coast Avenger. Just use your membership card. It's like a two-way radio.
Wants to use a big screen, though.
While patrolling for Midnight, Spidey sees Midnight and Nova grappling and breaks it up. And then Night Thrasher, being like a total jerk, ambushes Spidey for getting in his teammate's business. By then, Nova sees Midnight's true colors and fights him, but gets knocked unconscious and captured just as Moon Knight arrives, but too late. Too late. Oh, and the Punisher is still on the case. He's going to catch up eventually. He's been on the covers, but he'll get there.
He's there to sell books.
I also like how Bagley gets his one character with a big cape, Moon Knight, and really makes a meal out of it, which I, you know, all these Spider-Man and Night Thrasher and Nova guys, even Darkhawk only has the little thing. So now that he's got a character with a big cape, he's going to McFarlane, Batman that thing up.
The cover of issue 355 is inked by Klaus Janson.
Yeah, Bagley signed that Punisher gun, too.
Featuring Spider-Man, Moon Knight, Night Thrasher, and up front and center, the Punisher.
Hey, whose mag is this anyway?
Even Spidey gets it. Gets what's happening here. So Spidey, Moon Knight, and Night Thrasher pursue Midnight, who's got Nova, and there's like standing room only on the Mooncopter. Everyone hang on.
Hey, we that works well for the Thunderbolts.
Oh, no. You can go inside for one panel.
Not a lot of room in the cab. Midnight evades our heroes, but is seen entering the hidden water tower entrance to their lair by the Punisher, whose leads led him there.
Beautiful, beautiful, just... The only detail is the white skull and a little bit of, you know, the accessories. Way to say character in shadow, exactly who it is and everything. I love it.
The Punisher's able to point our heroes in the right direction when they show up and are, like, looking around frantically. But it's a trap. A squad of well-armed Secret Empire goons ambush them. I think it's cool when they manage to throw in story beats and character moments into these long, sprawling, sometimes seemingly issue-long battles. Like here they like reaffirm Spider-Man and Punisher's dynamic with Spider-Man preferring fists to the bullets and stuff.
How about Night Thrasher and Punisher colliding in those new Warriors issues?
And Midnight.
But I'm also like, how there are so many of these dudes. I mean, are these the ones that pass the try and fight Midnight?
Yeah, do they get numbers? Number 37. Midnight appears and confronts Moon Knight with the, you know, you left me to die bit. Night Thrasher gives an assist, but gets taken down by new players on the scene, an armored trio for hire called the Seekers, who are one-off characters from Danny Fingeroth-written fill-in issues of Iron Man, issue 214, and Fantastic Four, 342, from the late 80s. So again,
I'm
with the Fingeroth connection.
Vibes.
Yep.
I also feel this answers the age-old question whenever people are like, well, who would win in a fight in a comic book? It's whoever the writers want. Because we really think these three Jokers could... I doubt they could take Frogman on, but here they're going to convincingly...
hey, come on.
...stop our three superheroes.
One's got a length of chain that's, like, bursting with energy. And one has, a telescoping claw with energy-draining capabilities that he hits the Punisher with, and it really drains him. And then the third guy has these, like, big fists that detach and strike like a ranged weapon. And anyway, not that impressive, I guess. The Secret Empire hired these Jokers to come help. I guess they had them on retainer to distract our heroes while they load up their rocket and escape. What?
Well, you don't want that claw attached to your chest.
No.
Filled with kryptonite, Steve. It's the one thing that can hurt the Punisher.
It is green. Our heroes are left with no Nova, no Midnight, no water tower anymore, a damaged mooncopter, and now a sleepy Punisher. I mean, this is when the Punisher verbally describes his origin during a fever dream so that all of the others and us readers can hear his whole origin and feel sorry for him.
Well, I also feel like they kind of booted it a little bit. There's a fun fake out where, like, Thrasher's going to put the Punisher out of his misery, which we all know he's not going to murder him, but they should have had that panel at the bottom of the previous page so you get the turn.
Yes, the page flip.
And then you reveal. And I feel like these guys know what they're doing, and that's something that maybe the bi-weekly schedule will crush. But like comic book and one, you know, the tease at the bottom, because then there's a big ad in between. And then you'd be like, oh no, Night Thrasher's going to stab the... No, he's slashing the little machine that was draining his energy, and the Kevlar armor probably saved him, guys.
You know, it's always the Kevlar with the Punisher. Midnight delivers Nova to the council of, what, not eight right now, maybe? That are left? And they're still not happy with his performance. That makes Midnight so mad. He lashes out at the council, but Seven has this remote that he can push a button on that causes Midnight this, like, neural agony via his cybernetics. So Midnight's forced to be good and play along for now.
Yeah, but they're going to put more toys inside of him that make him even more kick butt. Although we're at the end of 91 and the, you know, it's winding up. So they still have the cool meter. I won't do this a lot, but the top thing and the cool is Pee Wee Herman. The second coolest thing is Marvel stock. And let me tell you, kids, end of 91, enjoy that stock for another year or so, because it's not going to keep going for a while. So that made me laugh that some of these cool-o-meters, and then a few down is Arena Football. Again, something that maybe isn't
It's back. Arena Football's back. The our local team that won the Arena Bowl last year that went to is starting up their season.
Yeah, because they used to have it on TV all the time and everything. It was pretty fun, but yeah. So now, obviously, post-bankruptcy, the stock did okay because Disney bought them out and everything. But remember, this is pre-bankruptcy, folks.
Yeah. During his latest procedure to have his implants upgraded, Nurse Lynn is seen mysteriously bribing a surgical tech to install, like, a little blocking device doohickey so that number 7's remote won't work anymore to cause midnight pain.
I believe it's a spark plug, Steve.
And she gives this tech like a mysterious stink eye that makes the guy fall right in line as the issue ends.
Hey, I've been on the receiving. I've worked with some people like that, Steve. So,
yeah, haven't we all?
I don't blame the guy. Like,
the cover of 356 places Spidey front and center again, flanked by Moon Knight and Night Thrasher, with Nova and the Punisher in a like a floating panel below them, like they've been banished to the Phantom Zone. But the inks are by John Romita Sr.
Never heard of him.
While the Punisher tries to shake off the effects of having had his energy drained, Night Thrasher keeps pushing Moon Knight's buttons, because Thrasher's such a jerk. He's like, you know, I wouldn't want to leave anybody. I want to leave Nova behind like you left Midnight behind.
That's a well-calculated, calm, level-headed remark to make, so, yeah.
About this far into the story, though, I'm starting to feel like it's funny how just accepted and established it is story-wise that Midnight was, in fact, Moon Knight's, like, sidekick partner, when from our recent reread we know differently, like, that was reluctantly and barely, you know? Maybe that one time he let him hang out and have hot cocoa in the kitchen that time.
Well, Steve, he let him steal his outfit and that, but people don't know it was stolen. So I think that gave the imprimatur of official succession. Because remember, he had the costume outfit, but right. Then he went in and stole the real outfit.
Yep.
And that's when they were like, oh, he must be part of the Moon Knight franchise.
The team.
In fact, I'm surprised that if Grant Morrison had to pay them when he does the whole Batman franchise thing. Stealing from poor Moon Knight. Guy needs everything he can get.
Our heroes in the repaired mooncopter track Nova via his helmet communicator and get fired upon as they approach the Midtown Tailor Shop headquarters of the Empire.
Oh, don't tell me they're going to find Nova strung up in some kind of apparatus again, like in New Warriors.
They could have just lifted that whole segment, right?
Hey, Bagley doesn't like drawing feet. Cover his feet in shackles. Thrasher, Moon Knight, and Spider-Man burst into the place. The Punisher is still too weak, so he stays back with Frenchie, Moon Knight's pilot. And Spidey was afraid of this. They do Martinizing here. I mean, the puns and the one-liners throughout this arc come fiercely and frequently, you guys.
But here, you do see not only the only one with a head on his shoulders for the bad guys, it is funny, is Thunderball. Because he's always like, stop fighting, you guys. Pay attention to the signal jamming. Make sure the prisoners are... Like, he's the only one that's the adult in the room, which is...
It's true.
As I know, pretty funny, because I always picture the Wrecking Crew as a bunch of...
Right, right.
You know, kind of low on brains, heavy on brawn.
Yeah, I had forgotten that he was a scientist. I didn't think I knew that.
So it's funny that he's always like, okay, stop. You can fight later. You know, is the prisoner secure? The bad guy, like, the good guys are coming. Maybe you should try and use good... Like, all their good ideas came from him.
I have more to say about that one when this whole arc ends, actually. But, well, I was going to say, too, with the one-liners, Milgram writing all these one-liners, like, there's so many one-liners from the characters, even, like, during the fights and stuff, that even the Punisher and Night Thrasher get in on it before all is said and done. And even Midnight himself, I was kind of surprised that he was so chatty and quippy even during combat, although, you know, that fits in a Spider-Man book. All right, while our heroes fight their way closer to the center of the complex, Nurse Lynn tells Midnight that she cut the signal from Seven's neuropain vice, so he goes and confronts the council and declares himself their new leader. Number 7 starts clicking the remote. nothing happens, and he gruesomely meets his end, head smashed into the wall with a splock.
Ugh.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of spit left all over the wall, right, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. Midnight then enters the fray, and goes immediately seeks out Moon Knight, naturally. Thrasher assists and gets like a Machine Man-like telescoping arm in the face, but Spidey punches it apart, correctly figuring that the arm is weaker while it's extended. And that sequence is like over 3 pages. It's actually pretty cool.
I also love that Thrasher still has his gun that was such a...
Yeah.
A pivotal emotional arc for him in his series. He didn't get rid of it, guys. He still keeps it back up there.
I was waiting for him to pull out the skateboard. Midnight, damaged with his arm and everything, retreats, and the Empire, along with Nova, escape on a rocket yet again. This time, the Secret Empire's Elite Escape Rocket, trademark.
Considering how often they need to escape, Steve, that's money well spent.
Yeah, right. Our heroes rejoin Frenchie, who has now repaired the moon copter.
Again.
And hey, where'd the Punisher slip off to? In Amazing Spider-Man 357, part 5 of Round Robin Sidekick Revenge, we've got a really nice looking cover here with the Punisher, Spidey, and Nova facing front. Inked by P. Craig Russell.
Yeah, we're back to three characters. You like how back then they would say early January or whatever. Nowadays, it's just another issue. They don't make any indication.
Yeah, but it's really early November if you're buying it off the stands. Maybe if you have one of those subscriptions like Andrew, you get it 3 months later.
Yeah.
Email.
I used to not be able to wait for the subscription to come and... Because I would see the new issue, like, at my comic shop and be like, I'm not waiting for, like, next week or 2 weeks for it in the mail. I need it now.
Oh, come on, Steve. But the one in the mail was all tore up
and yeah.
Folded in half and frozen. So, you know.
So the splash page here in issue 357 with our heroes summing up where things stand.
And bagel.
Using the issue's... title as a punchline, it totally cracks me up. You got Moon Knight saying, once again, the Secret Empire has fought us off and escaped. And Night Thrasher says, worse than that, Moon Knight, they've still got my partner Nova. And Spider-Man answers, yeah, Night Thrasher, every time we've come up against them and their cyborg super soldier Midnight, we've come out on the losing end. Secret Empire 3, the good guys 0, zip, nada, a bagel. In this case... a bagel with Nova. So in New York deli speak, if you order a bagel with Nova, you get lox, which is fish caught from Nova Scotia.
Yeah, it didn't really have the same impact on me, Steve. I was like, having it in giant fonted letters that are like 10 times the size of it, I don't, for me, the punchline did not warrant that amount of extra design.
And it looks like an attempted gradient with three colors in a bagel with Nova.
They really like that line. Obviously still working in the city. The Punisher took out number three. Number three, the guy who was always, you know, he's next. He was number seven's opposition to becoming the new number one. So, like, it was all about number three's turn, and now the Punisher takes him out. And
kids, that's why you don't go on smoke breaks. But it was done in a pretty cool way. Like, again, it's Spider-Man's book, so they're trying to keep it less. So you just have the panel of Punisher with this big knife.
Yeah.
And the guy standing there. Then the next panel, Punisher's putting on the, like, they skip right. The whole, like, because I don't think, guys, I don't know that he knocked him out and left him tied up.
Yeah, number three is replaced. Let's just say that. And... the Punisher sneaks aboard the Empire's Elite Escape Ship, trademark. But, guys, if only he wasn't so weak.
Zzzz. Honk shoe, honk shoe, honk shoe.
Meanwhile, Night Thrasher and Moon Knight are again in each other's face. Well, I mean, mask again. So Spidey suggests, like, going home and getting a little shut-eye, letting tempers cool down a little, and waiting for, you know, a sign, basically. And then it's like, cue the sketchy music, because everyone just wants to get physical. I don't know what Bagley had for breakfast that morning, but it's like, Mary Jane's barely got any clothes on, and Marlene, and everyone is wanting to bump uglies. No, except Silhouette. And, not Silhouette so much.
Yeah. I was going to say, Dwayne has been hitting the gym, though. He is.
He gets physical. Even like,
why are you tiring yourself out before the big fight?
He gets physical in a different way. Back on the ship, the Punisher, as number three, Sabotage. And the Punisher is number three, sabotages Nova's restraints, and he's able to bust free and send a signal to Night Thrasher, who gets a bead on his position and rallies the troops. Moon Knight, Spidey, and Darkhawk sees the mooncopter go by and follows. So he's going to get in on it, too.
What a clever bit of teamwork that you don't normally associate the Punisher with, too. I mean, that's why they had to hobble him, because otherwise he would have been like, I don't need these losers. I'm just going to kill everybody type of thing.
And then number three, the Punisher, incites a mutiny against Midnight until he's revealed to be the Punisher. And by the time the heroes show up, the Punisher and Nova are already in like an all-out facility-wide melee. With like Nova's still groggy and he's facing Midnight, but the next six pages are just all-out action.
And it looks like Nova is getting more into the half body thing where you don't need to draw the whole thing. The deadlines are catching up.
But I can just hear like the klaxon alarms going off and everything. It's very fun, like you say. There's just bodies ever. The Secret Empire is an inexhaustible supply of goons to just throw at problems.
But it's broken up by these events within the fight, mostly entrances by the different characters that serve as little like story beats within the fight. So you get like Doc Franklin joining the fight equipped with new Thunderball gear and everyone making a good entrance when Darkhawk shows up. And I mean, the biggest entrance is Nurse Lynn showing up in a matching Midnight suit, and she's got the cyborg eyes as the issue ends.
I did not see that coming, guys. I think it was just 10 minutes ago I said I was felt bad for her.
The cover of the sixth and last installment, issue 358, is a tri-gatefold cover with Spider-Man and the Punisher in the center and Moon Knight and Darkhawk on the back cover and teammates Nova and Night Thrasher on the fold-out inside front cover.
This is way cooler in person when you have a copy.
And I like that it's inked by this arc's writer, a well-established inker in his own right, Al Milgram. So the Lynn cyborg turns out to have been a pet project of number one before he perished, and it was kept secret from the rest of the council, and she volunteered to be their proto-cyborg. I mean, the Secret Empire's always been into this stuff. They once grafted animal parts to a guy to make him the Griffin. Remember that weird character?
Yeah.
And Cyborg Lynn's mystery stare? It wasn't that she, like, revealed her scary cyborg face or anything. She flashed the seal of number one, whatever the heck that's good for.
Yeah, you'd think with number one being dead that maybe the other people would be like, who cares?
That's what they were originally. Remember when they were like, alright, he's gone, who's next in line? Midnight's actually pretty shaken up by this revelation of Lynn being a cyborg. It's like, you know, you mean I was just a job to you? And all that. The bulk of this final issue, though, it's a 19 page fight scene. Talk about action packed.
Yeah, yeah, with not like a ton of splashes, but like just cool panel to panel fight progression with all kinds of intense close-ups and like excerpting part of the battle between different characters and everything.
And all those little moments and beats that I think break it up nicely. Like the, you get the first time that Darkhawk meets members of the New Warriors who he'd later join.
Wait, what?
Oh, we didn't get there yet, did we? Spoiler. The Seekers enter the fray and even up the odds. So it's two cyborgs, the three Seekers, the new Thunderball, and an armed goon squad versus Spidey, Punisher, Moon Knight, Nova, Night Thresher, and Darkhawk.
You know who I feel is missing, guys? Silver Sable. Doesn't it feel like she should be in the middle of this?
And you don't want a Paladin or a Ghost Rider?
The Sandman.
Ghost Rider, I feel, is the wrong vibe. Like, I don't need the, like,
he comes we're riding not fighting through.
Blackheart or whatever. You know, these are all dudes in robot suits and everything.
Well, you want Daredevil to show up?
No. Well, he is the ultimate Ultron stopper. But no.
That's true.
I think Silver Sable has that early 90s vibe forming going.
If Daredevil showed up...
What about Nomad?
Nomad. If Daredevil showed up, the next thing you'd see would be him crouching, just holding one of the cyborg heads in his hand. It'd be that easy. So Spidey ends up fighting both cyborgs himself, and webs cyborg Lynn's face up, and her true face gets revealed when she pulls the webs and her face clean off.
Well, it looks like they did too much work there.
Yeah, you got a little too much work done on your face, honey.
Yeah.
Well, I did like the fake out with the Punisher, where the one Seeker is frozen.
Yeah.
And the Seeker's like, oh no, he's going to stab his knife right into my eye socket, which sounds super violent.
Yeah.
Instead, he just shatters his armor because it's frozen and then punches him out. Which I'm like, whoa, this is Spider-Man time. If this is the Punisher title, then it goes exactly like he. That guy better be grateful he showed up in ASM.
I mean, we're telling you the beats of the plot as this thing moves along, but over 19 pages of fighting, there's all kinds of moments like that that are really fun that would be ridiculous for us to try to describe them all. But it, as you're reading along, it's fun little moments between your characters, fun visually seeing the action all paced and broken up into the panels the way they do, and then fun moments as well, because they know their stuff character-wise. It's Al Milgrom and Danny Fingeroth, for crying out loud.
And Stan Soapbox is a nice comment about the passing of Vinnie Coletta.
Oh.
Talks about the romance books and everything.
So the face of Cyborg Lynn being revealed, I mean, this truly horrifies Midnight, because, I mean, he's a victim. This was done to him. You know, it's part of his rage. She chose to give up her humanity. He's like, you're a monster. And she's an evil one, too. You know how she had that little spark plug put into his spine to block the signal? It didn't block the signal. It just changed the signal of the neuro torture device, so now she has the frequency, and she whips out her little remote control and just hobbles Midnight.
I imagine one day he was walking by the break room, and someone's changing the channel on the TV remote, and he goes,
opening up their garage with the remote.
Not channel six.
But Thunderball shows up at the right time and fights her for the remote. He gets his wrecking ball arm broke in the process, but it disrupts her signal to Midnight, and he starts shooting up the walls and the ceiling. Lynn fights him, like, you're going to do this over my dead body, and he's like, that's exactly what I'm trying to do here, and brings the whole complex down. Everyone makes a dash for the door, but it all comes down. One figure rises from the wreckage when it's all said and done. And that's the Wrecking Crew alumnus, Thunderball.
Well, he knows how to wreck a place.
Yep.
And see, this is the how you do the reveal. you see someone come up, but you don't know who it is. Then the page turn, and then you find it's Thunderball. That's the trick to it.
Thunderball quickly gives himself up. He's not going to fight. And says the cyborgs are dead and tosses their locked arms that he'd used as battering rams at our hero's feet. And it's like, if only Jeff hadn't died, as the issue ends. If only Jeff hadn't gone bad.
Locked in the Rocky II, where you grab each other's
right?
Yeah, I distinctly remember this panel.
Or is that the Predator handshake? All right, so Thunderball, you were saying, he had a huge moment here where he was like the hero of the whole thing, disrupting the neuro torture device. So if you think about this story as like Thunderball's weekend adventure, he gets busted out of the clink, gets to operate on a cyborg, suggests a terrible plan to go after Nova that brings the whole operation down, builds a new Thunderball set of accessories that he can use without powers, participates in this huge fight, including having the, like, finishing blow, has a building crash down around him, bludgeons his way out through the debris with the locked arms that he ripped off a couple of cyborgs, and then just gives himself back up into custody, kind of completing the circle and ending where he started. It's like Dr. Franklin's depowered, excellent weekend adventure furlough.
He's back in jail. Oh, that's how it should have started, with him sitting around the canteen. Let me tell you boys how my weekend went.
Yeah. Or telling, like, the chaplain at the the prison chaplain.
You see that next issue box? It says next, Cardiac's back.
And David Michelinie.
I also like at the end, Spider-Man repeats the whole Moon Knight's partner thing. So I guess that just Moon Knight wanted it, or he's the only one that
you're stuck
didn't
with it.
Want it. But everyone
you're stuck
else
with it
like...
now. Dead partner. Bucky. Well, the cyborgs Midnight and Lynn would actually turn up again, but a decade later, in the second arc of Charlie Houston, his Moon Knight series, the one with David Finch and all the pills and everything.
No.
Yeah. It was a really weird arc that took a long time to get to the part where they had the cyborgs. It guest starred Spider-Man for an issue. It guest starred Punisher for an issue, which I guess is fitting. But the confrontation at the end, it ends up being like the exact opposite of this, with like Lynn being the one who is turning on Midnight for Moon Knight's benefit. It was as screwed up as the rest of that series was, to be quite frank. So what did you think of this series, revisiting it after all these years? I thought it was pretty fun and very 90s-ish in so many ways, but it was, I thought, a fun exercise and a nice little, like, palate cleanser, closure on this whole Midnight stuff that I knew was always there when we were reading the Moon Knight stuff.
I think it makes more sense now than it did when I originally read it. Not that, like, you needed all that extra stuff. You're just, like, just following it along. They fill you in, but, you know, you have that extra history to it.
I liked it. I thought it was fun. I may have read these in 91. I don't know. That was when I was getting out, but I was still collecting comics, and like I said, probably read it in 2005 or whenever these discs were scanned. But reading it now, I had a good time. It's very self-contained, but as Steve said, you have these kind of existing character moments that reference a past and indicate a future that I feel sometimes is missing from modern comics, where they really want it contained, so that when they wrap it all up into five or six issues or whatever, it's this tight thing. Or maybe because the art team's not going to last past 12 issues or whatever, it's fun to have all these weird things about Aunt May and Mary Jane and all that. And, you know, is Dark Ock ever going to get it together, guys? That kooky kid.
No.
All right, we got to bump him up the priority list.
Well, they don't even know if he's a kid because he has that weird word balloon.
Right. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, listeners. Been a fun 14 years. On to year 15. Until the Secret Empire softball team goes undefeated. I mean, they're not known for their peripheral vision. Just have their, like, Roman numerals on their jerseys. Make mine Marvel. Later.
Singing his song, all the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet tweet tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet tweet tweet, rockin' Robin, rockin' Robin, tweet tweet, blow rockin' Robin, 'cause we're really gonna rock 'em tonight. Every little swallow, every chickadee, every little bird in the tall oak tree, the wise old owl, the big black crow, flap of their wings, sing and go bird go. Rockin' Robin, rockin' Robin, go rockin' Robin, 'cause we're really gonna rock tonight. And it was grand. They started going steady, and bless my soul, he out popped the buzzard and the Oreo. He rocks in the treetop all day long, popping and a popping and a singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet tweet tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet tweet, rock, rock, rockin' Robin, tweet tweet, blow rockin' Robin, 'cause we're really gonna rock tonight. Tweet, tweet, rock. Well, the pretty little raven at the birdman's stand taught him how to do the pop, and it was grand. They started going steady, and bless my soul, he out-popped the buzzard and the Oreo. He rocks in the treetop all the day long, hopping and a-bopping and a-singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street talk to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, rock, rock, rockin' Robin, tweet, 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 tweet,